Welcome to the Amateur Family History Podcast. Find out more at amateurfamilyhistory.com.
Hello and welcome to the second Amateur Family History Podcast. Thank you for downloading. My name's Andy, and if you're completely new to family history research, you might want to go back to episode one just to get a picture of what these podcasts are about and to keep things neatly in order. But if you've already listened to that episode, then you'll know that these podcasts are a little experiment that I've kicked off in the hope that I can get lots of lovely involvement and then turn them into a regular series covering all aspects of the practicalities of tracing your family history, digging up, obviously not literally, your ancestors and finding out a little bit more about what makes you, you. And as I said in that first episode, the first half dozen or so of these podcasts are going to be a little bit like a manual. They're going to cover the dead basics, and from there, we'll take it on for future subjects, hopefully get more and more of you involved, so it's not just me wittering on all the time. And as we go through those topics, I'll be asking for various contributions, thoughts, corrections, and observations that you might have. And I'll share those in future episodes and occasionally on the website and social media channels. But really, the best way for you to get involved, if you can, is to come and join me on one of these podcasts. If you've got a field of expertise that you'd like to share, or just some subjects that you want to try and kick a discussion off about, please do let me know. We'll find a way of recording over Skype or FaceTime or whatever. If you're located in the West Midlands, even better, we'll find a way of meeting up and do it that way. So all the details on how to get in touch are on the podcast description and liberally sprinkled throughout each episode. But let's get back now to this episode. This is episode two, and the subject for today is one of the most recently released mass record sets, and it relates to that period right at the start of World War II. Now, I'm starting here because it's a really good way of looking up a generation of people that you may have even met, people that you've heard of. My mum's on there, for example, as is one of my grandmothers and both grandfathers. So it adds an air of realism because it is a recent generation of ancestry. It's also quite a convenient place to start when you're putting a series of podcasts together as well. And it's called the 1939 Register.
The Amateur Family History Podcast.
So, as the name suggests, the 1939 Register is a register of people who were living in 1939. But what does it actually cover? Well, it covers the civilian population of England and Wales. It doesn't cover the Channel Islands, doesn't cover the Isle of Man, or Scotland or Ireland. It also doesn't cover the military, even if they are military personnel that are living in someone's private home, so billeted with a family. I've never needed to look into Scotland or Northern Ireland, but a quick bit of internet research tells me that the 1939 equivalent in Scotland can be ordered, or you can order an extract at a cost from the National Records of Scotland website. The Northern Ireland access is free, but it involves a request under the Freedom of Information Act. So all the details on that are available on the Public Records Office of Northern Ireland website. So before you even dig into this register, it's worth pointing out, as I said in the first episode, that the best way to start your family history research is to track down living relatives and ask them what they know. They may have even done some research themselves, but if they haven't, you might be lucky enough that they can tell you about some people that you can start to look up on the 1939 register. As I say, the 1939 is not the definitive starting point, but it's convenient for me because it's a good place to start if you're wanting to put podcast episodes into a convenient order. Now, there's lots of information about this register on the National Archives website because they're the ones that made it available for viewing in the first place. So nationalarchives.gov.uk is a good place to look into if you need any more info or specifics on some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about. So, how do you get to look at the register in the first place? Well, at the time of recording, it's only really available on paid sites. Find My Past was the first site to release it. It's now available on Ancestry. You can apparently also find it on MyHeritage, although I've not tried, and I believe it's just the transcription and not the original images. You can also find that it's available at your local library. Some councils have subscriptions that you can search actually within a library. Local to me, Solihull, for example, has a subscription that you can use, but it's worth checking your own to see if they've got free access within libraries. Some sites as well have free access weekends as well, and they also offer free trials. Remember, of course, that free trials do tend to roll into paid subscriptions quite easily, so be careful if you don't want to continue with those free trials. Now, this is regularly referred to as a census, but that's not quite right. We'll talk a little bit more about censuses in the next episode. This is quite similar, though. It's called a register, and it's a snapshot of people that are grouped by household on a particular day in 1939, and it lists the people, their occupations, and really usefully, their birth dates. An exact birth date can be quite hard to come by sometimes, so the 1939 can be really worth its weight in gold. So the register itself then was taken on September the 29th, 1939, and the reason for it was because just a year previous, the Parliament had decided that if there was ever a war, they'd need this register of everyone living in England and Wales so they can coordinate the war effort, as well as sorting out things like identity cards and rationing and that kind of thing. And the 1939 is a little bit unusual because usually censuses are protected under a 100-year privacy rule, meaning that the most recent proper, in inverted commas, sentence is the 1911. So you can imagine a few years ago there was quite a lot of excitement in the family history community when this 1939 was being essentially released early. It wasn't bound by the same 100-year rule. If you know why, by the way, please let me know. I've not actually looked that up, so I can't be expected to do all the work. Any contributions are more than welcome. I find the 1939 a really atmospheric family history resource. It's one of my favourite record sets. You'll hear it referred to quite a lot as being a snapshot of the population on the eve of war. And that's what makes it more atmospheric, especially if, as I did, you know some of the people who are on it or know some of the addresses that you could be looking at. So you can picture what it would have been like at the time. And unlike censuses, in my experience, there's still a reasonable chance that these properties are still going to be there. So that really helps you to picture your research. The house where my mum was born just a year before the register was taken is still there. I know it from growing up. And just seeing that information makes you picture what it would have been like at the start of World War II in a place that you know and what life might have been like. So it's really atmospheric stuff. Right, so next we'll have a little look into what's actually contained in the records themselves.
Get in touch by emailing amateurfamilyhistory@gmail.com or via the website at amateurfamilyhistory.com.
And there's lots to look at. There are around 40 million entries, and each person gets their own line on the register. These lines are grouped into household in house number and street order. So each line shows a person's name next to everyone else at that address, whether that person is male or female, their exact date of birth, and their marital status and occupation. You also get to see the original document as well. It's not just a computerised index, although there is that too, of course, because that's a thing that helps you to search. And compared to other historical records, the handwriting on the original image is actually quite easy to read, which is always rather pleasing when you're not trying to decipher very spirally handwriting from years gone by. But when you look at the actual image itself, one of the first things that will hit you is that there are loads of records that seem to be blanked out. There's a huge black stripe across some of them that say this record is officially closed. You can't miss these things. They're on pretty much every page. And the reason for this is usually because that person was born less than 100 years ago. So we're into data protection territory here. There is still an element of that 100-year privacy rule that applies to the 1939. So anyone born between 1918-ish at the time of recording and 1939, there's a chance they'll be closed. Unless they're known to have died. So the register was updated until the early 1990s. So if someone was born less than 100 years ago and died before then there's a chance that they'll be open. You'll also notice that the register itself has been kept updated over the years. Now, the reason for this was because the NHS used it from mid-1940s up until about 1991 when it was computerised, and those updates can be invaluable. They tend to be where married names are added when someone's got married. So you'll see the maiden name crossed out in red biro and the married name inserted alongside it. And both of those names turn up in the computerised search as well. So that's quite convenient. On top of that, the original website that made it available, Find My Past, also checked the register against official government death records. And if they found an exact match for someone, they opened that record on the 1939. So that again goes some way towards explaining why people that you would expect to be hidden, closed on the 1939 register, might be open. If there's someone that you expect to find on there because you know they've died but their record's closed, you can apply to have records opened. Details for this are on the National Archives website. They'll direct you to Find My Past, but there is a fee to try and get these records opened. But back to your research now. We will look in just a moment how you can actually get to see these records and what you should be looking for.
Follow us on Twitter, where our name is at AFH Podcast, where you can send us a direct message and find out about future episodes.
So I mentioned earlier on some of the websites where you can see the 1939, and personally, I find My Past easiest to use. You can switch between an address search and a person search. It's very prominent on the website where all the 1939 records are. On other sites, Ancestry is perfectly good as well if you've already got a tree on there, for example, as I did. And when the 1939 was released on Ancestry, I got lots of hints towards those 1939 records. But if you want to search it in isolation, then it's best to use the card catalogue feature of the Ancestry website and go straight to the 1939 information. So, on Find My Past then, if you're using a person search, what you need to enter is the person's name, obviously, approximate date of birth, and the area, which is broken down into county boroughs and various other local authority districts. And you'll get a load of potential matches. Just click through one by one to see who else is in that household, to see if it looks right. And remember, you can also look at the original image as well. You may get quite a lot of search hits, but just work methodically through them and hopefully try and find the right one. As with any family history source, really beware of transcription errors. These can be quite frustrating. So you can switch between the image and what the website thinks the words say by using the various buttons and image searches available. And the other thing to remember that I certainly found is the name of a street tends to be written just once on a page, at the top of the page. So if that's been transcribed into the website incorrectly, then that error is going to be carried through to each entry on that page. So if you can't find a particular street, grab a map or historical map or something and just look for neighbouring streets and then scroll up and down through adjacent pages and you might find what you're looking for. Also worth trying different spellings or selecting the name variants box on Find My Past, or if you're using Ancestry, untick the exact matches only feature and you'll get more records. And if you're finding difficulty finding something in particular, you've got a better chance then of finding the thing that you're looking for. Just as an interesting aside, actually, I saw an article in The Guardian a little while ago that analysed the 1939 and looked at the most common names that were on there. There's a little league table that shows the most common female names back in 1939 were Mary at the top, followed by Margaret, Elizabeth, Annie and Florence. I've got all of those people in 1939 in my family tree, as I have with the male names as well. John being the most popular, William, George, Charles and Frederick. Remember as well that people did use nicknames and short names and family pet names. So Nellie and Ellen, I found, Margaret and Peggy, are relatively interchangeable in 1939. Lots of different variants of Elizabeth. Francis can be Fanny, no sniggering at the back. Jack and John are pretty interchangeable, and I've even seen Sally where I expected Sarah and the other way round in 1939. So there are a few pitfalls, and we'll look at a few more of those next.
Please send us your thoughts, observations, suggestions, and hints and tips by emailing amateurfamilyhistory@gmail.com.
And there are some very good reasons why you might find it difficult to find certain people. The National Archives website has got some good reasons on there as well. But one of the things that it suggests is that some people were just missed out. I guess that no system's perfect. I still can't find one of my grandparents, for example. I don't know whether she's under one of those closed records, but I've no idea which one it is to try and get it opened. Some people may have even just avoided getting registered in the first place. Maybe that was just because they didn't want to get conscripted or even just wanted to stay off the grid, as we'd say these days. Another reason actually could be evacuation. By the time this register was taken, there was already a reasonable amount of mass evacuation happening across the country. And you might want to look in reception areas, as they're called. The National Archives website has a list of reception areas that could be worth investigating if there's any younger people that you know might have been moved to safety. I've not personally seen this in any of my research. If you have, then please let us know and share your story. Another good tip that I found is to look up and down the same page on the 1939. Even as recently as the 1930s, people really tended to live in close proximity to each other. I've spotted some familiar-looking names in neighbouring properties to my known ancestors, and with a bit more research, I found they too were part of the family tree. The final thing, really, is the bonus column on the right-hand side. When you look at the original image, you'll see a couple of inches of the right-hand page, and occasionally there's little nuggets of info that are put in there. It takes a bit of decoding sometimes, but for example, there's somebody in my tree who had their ARP detailed, you know, air raid precautions. You know who I'm thinking of if you're picturing Dad's army. And that's written in this right-hand page, but it doesn't come up in any of the search results. So that's worth just looking at the original image and just seeing what else you can glean from that right-hand side. So there we have a whistle-stop tour of the 1939 register, one of my favourite genealogical resources. As I said earlier on, it's very similar to a census, although it officially isn't. And that leads us on rather nicely to censuses as the topic of our next podcast.
The Amateur Family History Podcast.
And finally, for now, I'd like to end each of these episodes with a story about an ancestor that's really captivated me, fascinated me, got me a bit obsessed to the point where you really want to find out more and more about their life. These are the extraordinary, ordinary people that live in your family tree, and I'd really love to hear yours as well. Send me your examples and then we'll include those in future podcasts, because that's really what this family history research is all about. It's about uncovering those real people with real stories and real lives. So, for this episode, my example is my great-great-grandmother. She came over from Ireland in the mid-1800s. She settles in Stoke-on-Trent and gets married three times. Her first husband died in a workhouse because he was declared insane. That's his cause of death on his death certificate. Her second husband died in a rather gruesome way by falling into a mine, and there are some newspaper clippings about that which make it sound horrific. And her third husband was previously a convicted criminal. During her life, she had seven children. She was sadly present at the death of two of them. But she outlived her last husband and is actually buried in an unmarked cemetery plot that I walked past hundreds, possibly even thousands of times as a child, on my way to school, I could see her last resting place from the front window of the nursery that I went to when I was just a wee small boy. As with all Irish immigrants of the time, I only wish I knew a little bit more about exactly where she was originally from. I know it's Galway, I know there's going to be a trip there at some point, but only when I know exactly where. But that, as they say, is another story. Please do get in touch, please subscribe, please send me your comments. Thank you very much indeed for listening. And until episode 3, when we start to talk about censuses, happy researching.